All right, welcome to the Young Turks. Cenk Uygur, Anna Kasparyan with you guys. We have amazing stories today. Look, I can't even begin to describe all of them, but whatever you do in the second hour, don't miss the alt-right rally. What the notes they gave for how to look at that rally for fellow neo-Nazis is hilarious. It's one of the funniest things we've had in a long time.
Yes.
So that's an amazing story. Jeffrey Lord has been fired. Well, hold, okay. And we'll get to that story in a second. Why did he get fired? And was it right to fire him or not? Okay. But and tons of Trump sex stories about his staffers, about his staff. Okay, anyways, but one that is super important and could determine the fate of the world. And I'm not exaggerating. I talked about it on Old School last night. I'm going to explain how it affects the fate of the world little bit later in this hour.
Okay.
Okay. So, having said that, go.
All right. We begin with some updates on the situation with North Korea. Donald Trump has doubled down on his aggressive statements in regard to the potential conflict with North Korea. In fact, he essentially said the following: "It's about time someone stood up for the people of our country." He advised North Korea to, quote, "get its act together or it could be in trouble like few nations have ever been." Also asked about the possibility of a preemptive strike against North Korea, Trump declined to comment, saying, "We don't talk about it." But he does believe that maybe his comments regarding fire and fury geared toward North Korea wasn't tough enough. And what's interesting is, in the last 24 hours, there have been contradictions and statements that he's made in regard to North Korea, which is kind of scary. I don't know if he's really thinking things through, but he did make some statements on camera as well, and I wanted to share them with you. Let's go to the first video.
Number one, I would like to denuke the world. I know that President Obama said global warming is the biggest threat. I totally disagree. I say that it's a simple one. Nuclear is our greatest threat worldwide. Not even a question, not even close. So I'd like to denuke the world. I would like Russia and the United States and China and Pakistan and many other countries that have nuclear weapons get rid of them. But until such time as they do, we will be the most powerful nuclear nation on Earth by far.
So, real quick, I like that he included the United States in that list of countries that he would like to denuke. But he said that his first order of business as president was to essentially improve our nuclear capability. So, like, literally in the same week, he went from one statement to something completely different.
So, this is what standard politicians do and generally unscrupulous people. They say both things so that people can take whatever they want out of it, right? So the people who love the idea of us having nukes and maybe using them go, "Well, Trump said he'd use the nukes. He talked about nuclear weapons and how we made it. We have now more and better nukes, right?" And people who are a little concerned about that might go, "No, you guys are being unfair. He also said denuke the world." They don't even say also. He said denuke. He wants to denuke the world. Okay, yeah. This is otherwise known as the Sam Harris strategy, where you say both things, and so then when somebody says, "Well, you said you want to, you might want to use nuclear weapons," you go, "How dare you say that? I also said I want to denuke." Right.
Right.
And so, and by the way, he says nuclear is our greatest threat. Well, then stop threatening it. You're the one who said, intimated earlier in the week that you would use nuclear weapons against North Korea. It's not like some other person is doing it and there's nothing you can do about it. You're the one making the threat.
And you're the one who said that your first order of business as president was to improve our nuclear capabilities. So, which by the way, that was a statement that he made this week. Anyway, so you're right, Cenk. I think that he's trying to tone down rhetoric, which is a good thing. And it's because he is getting some pushback from those on the right as well in regard to how he's treating this entire situation. They want him to be a little more careful, a little more calculated and measured when he's publicly making statements about his plans on retaliating against North Korea. There is a second video I want to share with you guys. Let's take a quick look at that.
He has disrespected our country greatly. He has said things that are horrific. And with me, he's not getting away with it. He got away with it for a long time between him and his family. He's not getting away with it. It's a whole new ballgame. And he's not going to be saying those things, and he's certainly not going to be doing those things. I read about we're in Guam by August 15th. Let's see what he does with Guam. He does something in Guam. It will be an event the likes of which nobody's seen before, what will happen in North Korea.
Well, wait a minute, Anna. He just said he wanted to denuke the world, and he's again now going back for the at least second time in this week and saying it is going to be an event like no one has ever seen before. Earlier he referred to fire and fury like no one has ever seen before in this world. Well, we've seen nukes, so I guess this is worse than nukes because that was just atomic bombs that we dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The guy's a walking contradiction. If you think you agree with Trump, I have an important question for you. Which one?
Right. And look, to be fair to him, in that second video that we showed you, he said if they attack Guam, they will be met with, you know,
retaliation. But Anna, I get it, and you're right, and you guys all saw that for yourselves. But first of all, remember he promised a fire and fury like you've never seen before the Guam threat. That's what precipitated the Guam threat from North Korea. So, and then that led to him Trump making even further threats, and now. You just said you want to denuke, and then said again things like no one's ever seen before, intimating nukes. And then, by the way, we're not just implying that. The first time he said it, the very next morning, he tweeted out talk about nuclear weapons to make it absolutely clear he was, in fact, referring to nuclear weapons.
Yes.
So there he is again referring to nuclear weapons a sentence after he says he wants to denuke.
Right, exactly.
And if they attack Guam, we can attack them back. We don't have to use nukes.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And look, the reason why I bring that up is not to give him credit. Absolutely, the reason why this has escalated so quickly is because of the way he spoke about North Korea to begin with, and that led to North Korea threatening to attack US territories. So Trump is the problem here. He needs to find a way to de-escalate the situation instead of making it worse than it needs to be. But one quick comment that I want to make about public opinion. So look, I want to know what the other side thinks about this because I am curious. You know, is it just members of the left that think that this type of rhetoric is dangerous, or are there people on the right who support it? And the reality is it's a mixed bag. So there are people on the right who think that his rhetoric is problematic. However, there are US citizens right now who are fed up with the way North Korea has been handled in the past. So they're not saying we wish there was military intervention, but they're saying, well, the presidents that preceded Donald Trump didn't do enough, right? They walked on eggshells and they didn't do enough. And why didn't they hold China's feet to the fire? And I think that that's a fair criticism. And I think that's honestly where Donald Trump should focus his energy rather than let's use our nukes.
Yeah, no, I've been saying that for the whole week. No one did enough, whether it was Obama or Bush or Clinton. Now, look, I didn't want those guys going to war either, so I know that they made some deals where at least we didn't have military conflict. And yes, the longer you delay military conflict, the longer their development of weapons can theoretically go on. So that's the downside, perfectly aware of that, right? On the other hand, the longer you delay military conflict is the longer you don't have military conflict and might be able to avoid it by other means. God knows what a coup happens in that country. I mean, the whole population is basically imprisoned by just a handful of a dictator and a handful of his goons. So you might get a surprising result at any moment. So in that sense, give peace a chance. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't take super aggressive diplomatic actions. And yes, you can have aggressive diplomatic actions by saying to China, hey, you know what? Carrots and sticks. Earlier in the week, we talked about carrots for China. How about we talk about sticks? If you don't do what we're asking you to do in terms of putting pressure on North Korea, we're going to put pressure on you. That's it, tariffs. Oh, wow, they can start a trade war. Yes, but a trade war is potentially disastrous, and I don't want one, but it's better than a nuclear war. So let's use other really important strong tools at our disposal to make sure we resolve the North Korea situation. Nobody's happy with Kim Jong-un threatening the world over and over again. But look at the wrong expectations that Trump sets. He says he won't be saying those things anymore. Well, you can't, that is a promise you couldn't possibly keep. Kim Jong-un and all of his idiot generals are filled with hubris and bombast. And for all of our lives, all these guys, including his dad and his grandfather, have been like, oh, we will destroy you, we are the greatest, you're an ant, we're a tiger, all this insane stuff. Well, now if your new threshold or line in the sand is you're not even allowed to talk, you're not allowed to say those things, well, then you're going to guarantee conflict because that's a promise you can't keep. And finally, just before we came on air, Trump talked again about this. And every time he does, he endangers the world. He said about his tough talk and threats of nukes, etc., about North Korea, he said it's not a dare, it's a statement of fact. Oh, he's a child, man. That's the kind of thing that third graders say to one another when they're threatening each other in the schoolyard. And that's what we have. We have two man-childs here with Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. Unfortunately, they have enormous weapons at their disposal.
Right. All right, well, there's another component to the story that is insanely important. A debate has started among members of Congress as to whether or not Donald Trump should or needs to seek congressional approval to do a preemptive strike on North Korea. Now, thankfully, there are Republican members of Congress who are speaking up and saying that congressional approval is absolutely necessary. Senator Dan Sullivan, who's a Republican from Alaska and who sits on the Armed Services Committee and comes from a state North Korea claims is within range of its missiles, said preemptive war on the Korean Peninsula would require authorization of Congress. He continues to say that Article 1 of the US Constitution is very clear about that. We also have another Republican who says, I think it would be to the president's advantage to consult with Congress. It lets North Korea know we mean business. That's Representative Daniel Webster from Florida. Of course, there are Democrats who would definitely prefer congressional approval. Let's hear from one of them. We know that the president is suggesting potential use of military force. This is a conversation that needs to take place. Representative Dan Kildee from Michigan. And so the list goes on and on. And I'm glad that members of Congress on both sides of the aisle are now speaking up about this, because there is a potential preemptive strike against North Korea based on some of the rhetoric that we've heard from Donald Trump. But I also want to note that even though our law indicates that they're supposed to get congressional approval, there have been lawmakers on the left who have violated that. So in 1973, there was the War Powers Act that essentially says, gives the president the power to wage war for 60 days before an authorization from Congress is needed. After that, if Congress says no, or if they don't get congressional approval, they have about an additional 30 days to withdraw troops. And Bill Clinton, did the bombing in Kosovo without congressional approval. Also, there was the case involving Barack Obama and his military actions in Libya.
Okay, so usually both parties are enormously hypocritical about this, and depending on who's in office, they'll just say, "Oh yeah, the president has total power." If it's for the president from their party, and if it's not, they'll say, "Oh, the president has no power to do that. It's outrageous." And then read the Constitution. So what's the reality? Yeah, so I think that even the War Powers Act of 1973 is unconstitutional, because it clearly says in the Constitution that Congress has to declare war. So now we've made all sorts of nonsense compromises that have nothing to do with what's written in the Constitution. If you're a judicial conservative and you believe in strict interpretation, all of this should be clearly, obviously out of bounds.
And very quickly, remember, after 9/11, Congress essentially allowed presidents to go after terrorism without congressional approval. So that kind of opened the floodgates for more power concentrated in the executive branch.
So I want to get back to that in one quick second. But so dropping a bomb on a country, even if it's not against the government of that country, there is no such exception in the Constitution. There's no exception for drone strikes, signature strikes, only air wars against Libya. There's no exceptions for any of this. And there's certainly not an exception for nuclear war, which is as war as war gets. So going to Anna's point about the 2001 authorization for the president to act against the global war on terror, which is way too broad. Barbara Lee did a wonderful thing. She's a very progressive member of Congress, and she sits on the powerful House Appropriations Committee, and she suggested that authorization be taken away because it was from 16 years ago and is too broad. And guess what? It passed the committee, and that's great. That's amazing. And then, of course, Republican leaders came in and killed it and took it out of the bill that they were considering. So that's, again, the Republicans being hypocrites at the leadership level. But to be fair to the Republicans, here, finally, we are beginning to break some partisan ranks. And in the case, in this case, it's the Republicans who deserve credit. With a Republican president sitting in office, some of them, not most of them, but some of them are beginning to say, maybe we should go back to what the Constitution says. Obviously, partly because they can see Trump too. They have eyes.
Right. They don't see him as a rational actor. I think that's the reason why they're speaking up, and they realize what's at stake.
Yeah, so they realize how erratic he is, and they're worried that he might actually start a nuclear war, which would be unbelievable. Even Representative Adam Kinzinger, Republican of Illinois, trying to support Trump, had to admit that the words he used against North Korea were, quote, silly words, and that he wouldn't have said them. And he hopes that the president can find a smart way of saying it. Good luck with that approach. And finally, Representative Ted Lieu, Democrat of California, and Ed Markey, Democrat of Massachusetts, who's a senator, wrote companion bills saying that Trump should not have the authority to launch preemptive nuclear attacks before Congress declares war. Now that to me is the most reasonable thing in the world. You shouldn't even have to pass that bill. Mm-hmm. It's already in the Constitution, but it's great to clarify. And of course, the Republicans overall, the majority of them said, hell no. So, well, that now sends a message to Trump, despite some breaking in the ranks, that Republican Congress says, if you want to do preemptive nuclear war, it's still okay by them.
It's crazy and scary. All right, final part of this North Korea coverage involves evangelicals. Robert Jeffries, an evangelical advisor to Donald Trump, chimed in on the North Korea debate and essentially told Trump that God has given you the ability, the blessing to take Kim Jong-un out by any means necessary. So let me give you his statement. He says, when it comes to how we should deal with evildoers, the Bible in the book of Romans is very clear. God has endowed rulers full power to use whatever means necessary, including war, to stop evil. In the case of North Korea, God has given Trump authority to take out Kim Jong-un. Now, keep in mind that the passage that he's talking about is Romans 13. The passage says that government authorities have been installed by God, and a ruler is the servant of God to execute wrath on the wrongdoer. In Jeffrey's interpretation, that gives leaders freedom to do whatever, whether it's assassination, capital punishment, or even evil punishment to quell the actions of evildoers like Kim Jong-un. And here is one more tweet that he put out there. When the president of the United States draws a red line, he will not erase, move, or back away from it. Thank God for a president who is serious about protecting our country. The reason why I think that tweet is relevant is because it makes it clear that he is responding to Donald Trump's threats of nuclear action. His original statement didn't mention nuclear action, but that tweet is in response to it. So it seems that he's very supportive.
Yeah, so let's go into all the different ways that he has bastardized the text to his, if you believe in evil purposes. So first of all, Romans 12, the one right above Romans 13, says that you shall not repay evil with evil. Okay, so there goes that. Furthermore, Jesus said that you should turn the other cheek. Well, what happened to turning the other cheek? Now, look, do I think we should turn the other cheek if another country attacks us? No, but I'm not a Christian, nor do I think we should be ruled by the Bible. I think we should be ruled by the Constitution. But if you are a Christian, and this guy pretends to be a pastor and pretends to care about Jesus in the New Testament, etc. Well, perhaps he should read it. And they ask him about Sermon on the Mount. And he admits, sometimes people will ask him about the Sermon on the Mount. Have you ever even read it? Do you even know what Jesus said? And he said, quote, do you want the president to embody the Sermon on the Mount? I said, absolutely not. That's his quote.
That's insane. The hypocrisy is amazing. And again, you consider yourself one of the most moral people on the planet, right? Your religion makes you so moral. You're advocating for a use of force that would wipe out hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of innocent people.
Yeah, so let's talk about what a monster Robert Jeffress is. And look, whether you think Christianity is good and hence he is not Christian, or you think Christianity is bad and hence he is a Christian, I'm in neither one of those camps. I think all the religions are 100% untrue. So having a conversation about who's a true Christian or who's a true Muslim is irrelevant. The texts are completely contradictory within themselves. So yes, in the Bible it says eye for an eye. It also says turn the other cheek. So which one is it? Oh, don't believe the Old Testament unless it's Genesis and all the other parts that I like, including hating gays. But otherwise believe the New Testament, except don't believe the parts I don't like in that one. I mean, it's just total nonsense, okay? But if you claim that you're all about Christianity and God and all that, and you want the guy that you think is the most Christian, and you told all your evangelical voters to vote for him because he's the most Christian guy, and you tell him to ignore the Sermon on the Mount, oh, for God's sake. I mean, it doesn't get any less Christian than that, at least. I mean, if the Sermon on the Mount doesn't count, then what have you done to the Bible? You've done the anti-Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson, mm-hmm. by the way, a founding father and helped write the Constitution. Obviously, James Madison wrote it. Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence, but Madison also partly based it on what Jefferson had written in Virginia. Mm-hmm. So he would tear out huge parts of the Bible, most of the Bible, that he thought was gross and violent and unproductive. And he had the Jefferson Bible, only the good parts. It looks like Jeffress has the exact opposite.
Yeah.
He ripped out all the good parts and he only left the bad parts. And so in a nuclear war, and when you drop a nuke, and if you've never seen the pictures from Hiroshima or Nagasaki, it burns everyone alive. So you see, and that's in the core, 100,000 people incinerated immediately. On the outer edges, it burns people, but they don't die. And then they get the radiation, and then the radiation's in the water, and it's poison that kills them slowly. And it is the most grotesque thing humans have ever done to one another. You know, unfortunately, there is a long list of grotesque things we've done to each other, mm-hmm. but it is certainly near the top. And here's Jeffress going, burning babies alive? That's what Jesus would want. Wow, if you think that's what Jesus wants, then your view of Christianity is way worse than my view of Christianity, and I don't believe it at all. So yeah. These people are monsters, they really are.
And look, the reality is, you know, going back to your statement about how he takes the worst parts of the Bible and he, you know, celebrates those parts as opposed to the good parts. I mean, it's true of a lot of people. Now, I think the vast majority of religious people look at their religious doctrine and they take the good parts out of it, right? But you know, there are people who cherry pick and they use that doctrine as an excuse to hate, to advocate for violence, to discriminate against people. And so it doesn't surprise me. It's just that whenever we have these conversations, it's usually about people from one specific religion as opposed to, you know, evangelicals.
Now, two more things here. I don't want you guys to get the wrong idea that all Christians agree with them, not remotely.
Right.
There are a lot of Christians who've come out. There's a Catholic priest who wrote a great article in the Dallas News.
Joshua Whitfield is his name.
Yeah, and he's a Catholic religious leader. And he just laid into Jefferson and said he totally misunderstands the Bible. And he gave a bunch of Bible quotes, etc. Wonderful job by him. And Catholics generally oppose war, let alone nuclear war. The Pope has fought against war over and over again, including the Iraq war in earlier days. This Pope, and it's not just this Pope who's more liberal. No, even conservative popes were against the Iraq war, were against all those wars. And even on Twitter today, tons of conservative Christians, Republicans, saying that Jeffress does not represent Christianity. So I want to give you the full context. But if you're in Jeffress's camp, and that's the kind of evangelical Christianity that you believe in, Well, one, you're an enormous hypocrite, so you're supporting Donald Trump, who was married three different times. What happened to your family values? Who notoriously cheated on his almost all of his wives, I believe every single one according to charges by others, right? Let alone what's in the divorce papers about what he did to his wives, let alone what he has bragged about doing to women who gave no consent. Mm-hmm. And all the time you said you cared about morality and family values, you were 100% lying. It was political cover for things that you actually wanted to do, things grotesque like this, more war, nuclear war, etc. And then finally, guys, are you kidding me? So Jeffress's main point is, that's okay, government is awesome. The government persecuted against Christians. Mm-hmm. It's all over the Bible. We should watch out for the government. And if you're a conservative, aren't you supposed to say small government? And so the Christians would be, you know, thrown to the lions by the government. And so St. Paul warned about the government. They all did, and they said it will. You want to read a quote about it?
Yeah, I do.
Anna,
I do.
Go ahead.
Let's go to Graphic 17, and this is written by Catholic pastor Joshua Whitfield that we referenced earlier. He says, for Paul, it would have been unthinkable to consider a political ruler some sort of anointed Christian prince or president waging war on behalf of believers. He saw political authority as something ordered by God rather than ordained by him.
And he talks about how Paul thought that God was, government was demonic. Now, look, I don't agree with that either. And we should be ruled by the Constitution, not the Bible.
Yes.
But in terms of if you actually care about what the Bible says on the core of it is, there was no, Jefferson takes the one small part of the Bible where it's like, oh, I guess let government do whatever it wants. And, you know, and there's, of course, let's give Caesar what is his, etc. Basically, because the Christians were nonstop getting slaughtered by the governments of the time, which were pagan. It was basically saying, don't mess with the government, otherwise it'll kill you.
Right. Exactly.
And so one last point that apparently the so-called Pastor Jeffress never thought of. You know who was killed by the government? Jesus Christ. So the local political leader in the area murdered Jesus. And now Jefferson's idea is that's okay. The government can do things that appear to be terribly evil because it's responding to evil. And God ordained it to commit heinous acts. And that's what Christianity stands for. If you're in his camp, man, you're monstrous and you're deeply immoral. And if that's your vision of Christianity, you have done more to malign Christianity than any non-Christian ever could.
Yes. All right, that does it for our North Korea coverage. When we come back from the break, a little more coverage of foreign policy, including Donald Trump's indecision on what to do in Afghanistan and how many lives are being lost as a result of that.
Back on TYT, Cenk and Anna with you guys. Dizzy Moore wrote in on YouTube Super Chat. So if you don't know, that's where you can support the show a little bit and get your comment to us in a way that we might be able to read it, because there's like a million comments on YouTube. Mm-hmm. He wrote in, if John Ayerlo is going to helm a morning show, I suggest the title Coffee and Pie.
That's actually super smart.
That's a super smart idea, Dizzy.
Can I be on that show?
No. We're back to the conversation.
By the way, look at what I'm getting myself into. Like, anyway.
Yeah. You want to be on more shows? Sure?
I know. Okay.
Anyway, Raven Olmacher says, just wanted to say congratulations on the new investment deal. I'm proud to support such an amazing show and look forward to all the accomplishments that are sure to come. Look out, establishment, the North remembers. So Raven, of course, you know I love that. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Now let's go to Twitter. Jess says, I'm living for Anna Kasparian being on hour one more and more. What is this?
Thank you.
I am Soxus. Trump can't take North Korea to court, so he over-escalates to nukes, because that is his normal go-to move. Oh, yeah, I'll sue you.
Or firing people.
Right. Aldo, one night jing on, I said, denuke. Our wordsmith in chief strikes again.
It's so true.
Yeah. Just Ray here says, religious people giving approval of violence should always be considered a warning sign. Nothing good ever comes from it. Yeah, has there ever been a time when a religious leader was like, okay, we're going to threaten terrible violence, and then something good came? Mm-hmm. Like the next chapter was wonderful.
Yeah.
No, it's never gone that way.
I also wanted to read a comment that was sent to me by Jordan French, longtime viewer of the show, who has a background in theology, so he's a bit of an expert. He says that same Romans 13 passage also says the government is right to pass taxes, and it's our Christian duty to pass them, literally in the next verse.
So. I like how Pastor Jeffress did not read Romans 12 or 14. Yeah. He just read half of Romans 13 and was like, oh, good enough, I'm done with it.
Cherry picking, right?
Exactly.
Whatever suits his agenda.
Yep.
All right, moving on to some more foreign policy. Donald Trump has been incredibly indecisive over foreign policy in regard to Afghanistan. And as a result, it seems as though terrorist organizations, including the Taliban, are now gaining more momentum in the country. So instead of approving their plan for more troops as anticipated, the president has caught his generals off guard by questioning whether the 16-year-long effort to stabilize Afghanistan is still worth it. Now, prior to this story breaking, there was a meeting that Donald Trump had with generals in mid-July. And during that meeting, he was supposed to finally come up with a decision over what to do in Afghanistan. Do we pull out our troops? Do we commit more troops on the ground? And the meeting did not end well. And as you can tell, he is still indecisive. NBC did a really great report on that meeting, so I want to show you a snippet of that. Let's take a look.
Senior administration officials take NBC News inside that meeting 2 weeks ago, where the president's key advisors surrounded him, including Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis. Those sources say the president lashed out, suggesting Mattis should fire the general in charge of Afghanistan, venting, quote, "We aren't winning," influenced, it seemed, by a meeting he'd had earlier with veterans of the Afghan War. Those same sources tell NBC News some in the room were taken aback by an analogy the president made, referencing the renovation of a favorite New York restaurant led by an outside consultant to illustrate how those on the ground might make better decisions than those at higher levels.
His point was perhaps it would have been better if that owner had gone to the employees who are working in the restaurant rather than hired someone from the outside and wasted a lot of money.
Those officials say the president also seemed annoyed China, not the US, is making money mining rare minerals in Afghanistan. Sources tell NBC News the president left the meeting without deciding on a strategy and that his advisors left stunned.
By the way, in that meeting, he was reported to be particularly harsh to Mattis, and Mattis ended up leaving for a long walk so he can kind of think about things and what his next steps will be. But I think, look, the story has a lot of moving parts, but what I want you guys to pay attention to is the issue of China mining for the minerals. Trump is bitter about that. And also, he wasn't given one option. He was given a variety of options, including pulling troops out or committing more troops. And he doesn't like any of them, probably because there are some financial considerations that he wants them to take into account, and they haven't yet.
So I've got a lot of mixed feelings about this, so let's talk about all the different angles. First, on the minerals, I want to be clear, he doesn't think we should get contracts to mine the minerals, he just wants to take them.
That's right.
And he said this during the campaign, and people thought he was, you know, exaggerating when he said, well, we went to Iraq and we spent all that money, why don't we just take their oil? And people thought, well, no, he's oversimplifying, that's insane. Of course, we can't just take their oil, then the whole country would be an open revolt to us and we could never get out, right? No, now he's president, he's saying, well, they've got like $1 trillion of minerals in Afghanistan. Why don't we at least take it to pay for the war? No, that would be stealing. That would be robbing from them. And if you thought you had a bad fight in Afghanistan today, wait till you let get a load of Afghanistan if you do that. Now, but there are plenty of things that I sympathize with Trump on here, which is rare. So, one, he's right, there are no good options in Afghanistan. Two, now let's remember, Obama took a long time to make a decision on Afghanistan, so fair is fair. Three, the generals want to push him in a certain direction. And by the way, one of the reasons why that stuff got leaked to NBC, why there's an article in Politico, is a lot of the generals in the military industrial complex going, why won't he just do more war already?
That's right. And McCain has responded to all of this by saying, you know, Trump is being indecisive, and so I might take matters into my own hands and do what I can to commit more troops. And I'll get to some of the more detailed proposals that McCain has. But yeah, the generals want more war. John McCain, unsurprisingly, with his hawkish nature, wants more war. And so half of Trump's intentions, I would say, are good intentions, because he realizes that what we've been doing has been failing.
And he apparently met with real veterans from Afghanistan. Wonderful, that's the most he's ever done for veterans.
That's true.
I'll give more credit to Trump here. This is unprecedented, and then I'll tell you what his actual plan is, which is not good. In 2013, he said about Afghanistan, we should leave Afghanistan immediately. No more wasted lives. If we have to go back in, we go in hard and quick, rebuild the US first. He's right about that. He should just simply do that. That is one of the options. And he could stop thinking about it and just do his original plan. And in July of this year, when he's president, so just last month, he said, we've been there now for close to 17 years. And I want to find out why we've been there for 17 years and how it's going and what we should do in terms of additional ideas. About whether there'll be more troops there, he said, we'll see. So those instincts are good. And then his generals, and they view this to be like a positive thing, and they gave it to Politico as like, come on, this is, come on, we want more war, right? The Afghan government controls or influences only 60% of the country this summer, and they say last summer they controlled 65% of the country. So they're saying it's deteriorating, and hence we should put more troops in. But wait a minute, we've had troops there for 17 years, and you still only control 60% of the country? And you thought it was a great thing when they controlled 65% of the country last year? No, all of these things are disastrous. Get out, get out, get out. Now, so that's a lot of praise for Trump and the direction he seems to be going. The minerals are a good point by Anna. There's a huge counterpoint. Doesn't understand how this thing works. Mm-hmm. And basically looking for how do I get, or how, to be fair, not Trump directly. How do we get rich off of this thing?
Right.
That's the way his mind works. But much worse is that if he just wanted to get out, he could actually make that decision. He's the commander in chief. You can just order it and we're done with it, which is what he's been saying for all along. Why don't you just do it? Well, there's a reason why. He's thinking about privatizing the military in Afghanistan. Now, this has a couple of components. One, it takes power away from the government and it gives it to unaccountable private mercenaries. Now, okay, number two, the guys he's thinking of hiring is led by Eric Prince, the guy who used to run Blackwater, who is the brother of Betsy DeVos. And the DeVos family is one of the top donors to Republicans in this election cycle. So, and Eric Prince is also the guy who went and met with the Russians in a secret meeting in Seychelles that we found out about a couple of months ago. Mm-hmm. So Eric Prince is helping Trump with the Russians, and his family gave more money to the Republicans than almost anyone in the country. And all of a sudden, Trump thinks, well, I don't like the option of leaving anymore. I don't like the option of putting in more troops. Mm-hmm. And he's, in other words, biding his time to introduce the option of, why don't we just give it to my friend Eric Prince and let him make billions of dollars off of it? That way the millions he gave us will be repaid by billions from taxpayers.
That's right.
And the mercenaries will be unaccountable, so they can do whatever the hell they want. Eric Prince wrote an article in the Wall Street Journal in May arguing for this position, and he said we should just have a viceroy. We're going back to viceroys? And by the way, not a government one. Not one accountable to our democracy,
right,
but a private viceroy for a mercenary army.
And think about the ramifications of Blackwater, or you know, this private organization having complete control with a lack of oversight. Now, of course, there's the cost component of that, where we're going to have to spend a ton of money paying these private contractors to handle the situation in Afghanistan. But there's also the issue of how Blackwater behaved in the past during the Bush administration. And so, look, people can deny it as much as they want, but our actions in the Middle East have only led to more instability and more hostility toward the United States. You have Blackwater type guys back in control in a place like Afghanistan. I mean, you think they're going to treat people fairly or you know, in a nonviolent way? I think it's actually going to lead to even more hostility toward the United States.
Yeah.
It's a really bad idea.
And by nonviolent, what we mean is in a way that gets the country on our side so we can quote unquote liberate it and then eventually leave so taxpayers stop paying money and so that we stop losing troops and we have stability in the region. And so look, you know, my opinion of Trump is not very high to say the least. But if he does the right thing and says, hey, this, after 17 years, this isn't working, I agree with the veterans. I agree with the libertarians. I agree with a lot of the right wing who says we should get out, the nationalists. I agree with progressives, etc. We're leaving. Then I'm going to give them all the credit in the world on that issue. Okay, and I'm happy to do that. I can't wait to do that. But if they go to a mercenary army instead, and they would be paramilitary units and not subject to oversight by the United States military. And they're bragging that they're calling this the Laos option. You remember what we did with Laos during Vietnam? Did that go well? That ended in disaster. But they put it out there like, oh yeah, yeah, let's just do the same thing we did over there, as if it was a positive thing. So if he goes in this direction to enrich his donors at the expense of our democracy, let alone what might happen in Afghanistan when these mercenaries take over, it will be hideous. And just when you thought it couldn't get worse option than more military escalation in Afghanistan, he will have found an even worse option.
All right, let's go back to the United States. A quick update on what's happening with health insurance. If you're relieved that members of the Senate were unable to pass a replacement plan for the Affordable Care Act, don't breathe too easy, because it turns out that next year, health insurance companies are planning on raising the prices of premiums due to the instability and uncertainty caused by Trump and members of Congress. Now, keep in mind, private industry hates uncertainty, and so they're unaware of what's going to happen. Mixed signals from President Donald Trump have created uncertainty far outside the norm and led insurers to seek higher premium increases for 2018 than would otherwise have been the case. Now, Kaiser Family Foundation did a study into this because they were curious to see what the health insurance market will look like in 2018, and unsurprisingly, the numbers aren't looking too good. So let's go to graphic 28. Kaiser researchers looked at proposed premiums for a benchmark silver plan across major metropolitan areas in 20 states and Washington, D.C. Overall, they found that 15 of those cities will see increases of 10% or more next year. The highest is a 49% jump in Wilmington, Delaware. The only decline was actually in Providence, Rhode Island, with a 5% reduction. Now, if you look at this list, you'll get a sense of the cities that will see an increase in their premiums. New York City, 10%, Portland, Oregon, 12%, Los Angeles, California, 12%, Nashville, Tennessee, 21%, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 34%. So the numbers aren't looking good. And insurers that assume that Trump would make good on his threat to stop billions in payments to subsidize co-payments and deductibles requested additional premium increases ranging, again, from 2 to 23%.
So there's a couple of reasons why this is disastrous. One is that, as Anna's telling you here, they're assuming that they might not get help from the government to on those premiums as was the old plan. So they're like, well, let's just in case boost the premiums, and so now you have to pay more because of the instability. Secondarily, they thought that that the IRS might stop enforcing the mandate and the fines, so they were worried about that would cost them additional premiums as well, because then people would stop getting insurance knowing that there was going to be no fine. So because of that, they also increased premiums by 1.2 all the way up to 20% on top of what the 23% we talked about earlier. So that's all disastrous news for anyone who has to, especially if you don't have employer-based healthcare. And part of the reason why instability is a really bad idea. Instability is a bad idea when it comes to world affairs, markets, and in this case, health insurance as well. But secondarily, it creates this ironic situation where Trump will then turn around and go, oh, look at this, premiums are going up because of Obamacare.
That's right.
Now the experts say, no, they're actually going up because of you.
Right.
But he'll lie about it.
Of course he'll lie about it, and people will totally buy it, right? They'll think, oh, this is the Affordable Care, this is Obamacare, look at the premiums, it's imploding. And that's the frustrating part about all of this, right? It's how easy it is to spin what's really going on. And in this case, again, it's about the instability and this unstable situation that we're dealing with is at making them raise their premium prices. Yep. This is crazy, but I mean, that's the reality of the situation. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, so don't believe the hype. Go and actually check out the Kaiser Family Foundation report on it and find out what's actually happening in the markets. All right, we got to take a quick break here. When we come back, it is a sex scandal in the Trump administration. There's actually two of them. Now there are two of them. But the first one is monumentally important and could affect the North Korea situation and whether Trump is going to be removed from office. So we'll explain why when we return. All right, back on the Young Turks. Members of the day are Alex Dumpling and Mark Wish. Thank you for being members, guys. And today in the post game, we will discuss. I mentioned this in a previous old school episode, which you could also get through membership, about how the thing that I am best at is actually being an enjoyer of life.
Okay.
Okay.
That's a good thing.
That's a great thing. Thanks, yeah. God. Two, two, two. And I want to tell you what I'm enjoying lately, which okay. I think will greatly amuse you.
Okay.
So tytnetwork.com/join to become a member, and tonight Aggressive Progressive with Jimmy Dore and Steve-O. Check that out. Okay, two quick tweets. Tealy Cat says he wants the generals to do it all for him. The presidency interrupts his golf game. So that's, remember, he criticized all the generals nonstop during the campaign. Then he gets in office. General John Kelly is his chief of staff now. General Mattis is the Secretary of Defense. General McMaster is his his national security advisor. All he did was surround himself with generals. You know why? He thinks rich people and generals are successful.
Yeah.
And so, and now at the same time, he's, to be fair to him, he's not listening to the generals on Afghanistan, partly because it appears he wants to privatize it for his friends. And finally, Mike Ciarlo says, insurers are significantly raising premiums in 2018, higher than inflation. It's not uncertainty, it's profit opportunity. Mike, I hear you on that. I just think it's a little bit of a combination of both.
Yeah.
They think that the market has to be able to handle those price increases. And since TrumpCare did not actually go through, all those premium increases will just be profit. Mm-hmm. They were planning for situations that didn't actually occur. So, but the premium increases do occur, and it's nothing but profit margin.
Right. For them. Yeah, I know.
Yep. All right. What's next?
All right. Now to get to the racy part of the show. Let me set the story up for you guys so you have context before we get into the recent details. Donald Trump has bragged about the amount of influence he has over the publication National Enquirer. In fact, during his beef with Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough, he claimed that they had reached out to him and begged him to stop the National Enquirer from publishing a story about their relationship, a claim that they deny. But now an interesting report was published by the National Enquirer indicating that Paul Manafort had cheated on his wife. Okay. Paul Manafort worked with Trump, and this report came out literally a day after news hit headlines indicating that Manafort had his home raided by the FBI as part of this investigation into Russian collusion. Now, again, hours after the Post story broke, the Enquirer went public with a story about Manafort having an affair. So the question is, where did the National Enquirer get this story from? Could it have come from Donald Trump, considering the close ties he has with National Enquirer CEO David Pecker, who is a huge Trump advocate? We'll see. Now, let me give you just a few components of what they wrote. I don't want to get into the details because I don't care about his affair. It's none of our business. But it's just really terrible, you know, pretty brutal toward him.
Yeah, so I think this story is monumentally important because I think it has everything to do with Trump's Russian investigation. And I'll explain that in a second. But whether it was planted by Trump, just to give you context on that before we tell you the terrible details of the story. Well, Trump just bragged 6 weeks ago that he claimed Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough tried to get him to stop a National Enquirer story, but that he wouldn't do it, thereby admitting that he controls what goes in the National Enquirer and does it. So They asked him to stop a story and he said he wouldn't stop that story, which he apparently has the power to do. Mm-hmm. Now we know, and everybody in politics knows, that Donald Trump's been planting stories in the National Enquirer with his friend David Pecker for all this time. Remember the story about Ted Cruz having five mistresses came out of the National Enquirer in the middle of the primary. Boy, that was awfully convenient.
Right.
And it's the most unbelievable story ever.
Yes.
Five women would sleep with Ted Cruz? Come on. And no one would believe that. More likely to have alien babies running around. Anyway, so whenever there's a Trump opponent, Trump smears them. And by the way, National Enquirer did run the story about Mika and Joe Scarborough after Trump was having a huge fight with them. So this is how Trump goes after his opponents. Wait a minute. Paul Manafort was his campaign manager and is being investigated on the Russian ties. That means now apparently Trump is attacking Manafort. That has all the ramifications in the world. Now let's give you the details of the story because it gives you a sense of how deeply he's attacking him.
Yes, so just some key components of what the National Enquirer wrote about this alleged affair. They accused him of cheating on his wife with a hottie younger than his own daughters. The National Enquirer investigation exposed a tawdry adulterer who wore his wedding ring while romping with his 33-year-old mistress in the bedroom he shares with his wife. And then here's another one. President Donald Trump has been focused on draining the swamp in Washington, D.C., which is positive, obviously, of Donald Trump. Meanwhile, one of his trusted advisors was betting another woman behind his wife's back, betraying her and his country.
So a number of important things that come out of there. First of all, they are burying Manafort, saying that it's a sleazy sex scandal, as Anna quoted, a tawdry affair. They later say that here's the smutty details. They bring his family into it. I mean, they went after him 100%. They left nothing left in their arsenal. So the second part of it is that last quote was incredibly important, thereby betraying his family and his country, and referring to Manafort, his former campaign manager, as the swamp. So now, first of all, just real quick on who it might be. They have sources from inside the White House. They quote them. Now, National Enquirer might make other things up, but they do have sources inside the White House. That is true. So let me read you one quote from a source they had, and I know exactly who this sounds like. The quote says, "The worst part was Paul would sleep with her in the master bedroom of the family home. He would leave his wedding ring on too." Okay. Now, I don't know for sure, and you could make any conclusion you want out of it, but that sounds exactly like Roger Stone. See, what Roger Stone does is he will make up gratuitous details in a story to make it seem more believable and so that you can visualize it. So he has bragged about this in the past, including the famous case of Elliot Spitzer and how Roger Stone claimed he left his black socks on while having sex. Mm-hmm. Now, at the time, I thought that that was a lie. And then it turns out it was, and Roger Stone bragged about it later. Ha ha, I did it so people could visualize it. So here we are again, master bedroom in his wife's bed with the wedding ring on. It's Stone 101, and Stone is Trump's hatchet man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now look, that doesn't have to be true. It's okay, you can call that speculation, and we don't know it for a fact, so I'm just giving you all the context. But by far the most important part is, obviously, Trump allies are planting this story against Manafort.
Mm-hmm.
And that means there's only a couple of options. Either they had threatened Manafort earlier with this blackmail, which is Trump 101 that he referenced in the Mika and Joe story. He said, and Joe Scarborough said, "I won't give in to his blackmail over the National Enquirer." So he's done this before. So he threatened Manafort. But apparently Manafort didn't listen, and hence the blackmail was actually employed.
Right.
That would logically mean that Manafort is cooperating with the feds.
Right. So going back to the raid that was done on Manafort's home in late July, remember there was the fear that some Trump aides have in regard to the FBI using whatever evidence they have against Manafort as leverage to get Manafort to speak up about what's going on with Trump and collusion with Russia. And so there's definitely fear coming from the Trump camp. And now this story gets published literally the next day after we find out about that raid on Manafort's home. I mean, look, again, a lot of what we're saying right now doesn't have hardcore evidence behind it. It is speculation, but I mean, you put all the dots together, and it just makes sense.
Yeah, but by the way, guys, look, just because you don't have the internal memos from the FBI doesn't mean that it's like, oh, it's not true. It means I don't have the smoking gun, but Robert Mueller might. And if you can't use logic, okay, then we should stop analyzing any news story.
Right.
And look, the logic of this is Trump against Manafort. Manafort has info about his campaign. They're investigating Manafort for connections to Russia. They're investigating Trump for connections to Russia. We find out that they have Manafort's hardware. So look, there's another possibility. They think, okay, we're going to make Manafort the scapegoat. We're going to say, oh, it wasn't us. Oh, he did a deal with the Russians? Oh, well, the president didn't know anything about that. I can't believe Manafort betrayed his country. Okay, good luck with that strategy. Because if Manafort has the evidence and he's given it to the feds, you're screwed.
And by the way, I want to go back to graphic 38 real quick. Because just the wording means everything. The way that this paragraph is constructed, President Trump has been focused on draining the swamp in Washington, D.C. Meanwhile, one of his trusted advisors was betting another woman behind his wife's back, betraying her and his country. I feel like that's Trump 101.
No, look, if you don't think that was Trump that planted the story, you don't know anything about politics, and you want to purposely be blind to what Trump has done over and over again with this exact publication. That's fine. I don't care if you believe it, because there are actual realities, and they're going after Manafort because they know what happened, right? Mm-hmm. So this is potentially disastrous news for Donald Trump and wonderful news for the rest of the world. So if Manafort has begun to cooperate with the special counsel, tick, 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 it's only a matter of time before Trump goes down. So now we're in a race against time. Can Mueller conclude that investigation with apparently maybe with evidence from Manafort, which could be absolutely critical, before Donald Trump uses any nukes? I'm not kidding. I'm being dead serious about this, because he keeps threatening nukes. And if you think that he wouldn't do something that stupid or crazy or immoral, you don't know Donald Trump at all. So if it turns out he knows that there's an investigation coming to get him, his popularity is down to 33% and dropping, mm-hmm. and he doesn't understand the severity of nuclear war, and he thinks, what, we have more nukes than them, we'll win. And he keeps saying things like that over and over again. Mm-hmm. And he is convinced that it would help him rally the country. If you're sure that Donald Trump wouldn't do it, I don't know what you would base that on. Even Donald Trump doesn't know what he's going to do. So it's a race against the clock. So Mueller, go, go, go. And it's not just me that now believes that. Apparently, the Trump administration believes that. That's why they're attacking their former campaign manager.
Oh, this is some Game of Thrones shit.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
So, hey, I'm just going to repeat it one last time. It's great news that they're attacking Manafort. That means they think Manafort is working with the feds against Trump. Great. Okay.
Yep. All right, one final story for you in the first hour. Former Trump staffers Jason Miller and AJ Delgado have now parented what's being referred to as a love child. All right. So, amazing family values individuals there who apparently had this affair during Trump's campaign. Miller used to serve as Trump's communications director, while Delgado frequently appeared on news shows to talk up the mogul before he became president. Now, the reason why this is making headlines right now is AJ Delgado is basically going on this Twitter rant in response to a Page Six article where Jason Miller says that he and his wife are excited and welcome this new baby into their lives and into their family. And Delgado didn't take too kindly to that, because apparently after she told Miller that she was pregnant, he cut off communication. They only communicate through lawyers. So let me give you a little taste of what Delgado has to say on Twitter. Dear friends, beyond thrilled to share with you that I'm now a proud mother of a beautiful son, William, born July 10th. That was the announcement that she made for her new baby. Now Jason Miller told Page Six.
Well, that's what Delgado says. We don't know that Jason Miller was a source for Page Six. Although they quote him, so it's a pretty good guess.
Right, okay. So he says, my wife and I, along with our two daughters, are excited to welcome William into the world and into our family, and we appreciate the well wishes we've received from so many. Now, Delgado was not happy about that. She says, oh wow, just reading the Page Six article, so much wrong in it, I don't know where to begin. Love how Page Six article implies it was a Vegas love child. No. The father and I were dating for 2 months. He was separated from his wife, he said, and had been since June. And I'm not sure what Jason means that he and his wife are excited to welcome Will. Really? News to me. Let me shut up before I say more. She did say more. She says, wasn't my choice to discuss this, but since Jason went to Page Six, something she's assuming, I now have to share a story to McKay Coppins. Stay tuned.
Okay. So let me just back up, give you a complete context on this and why I think it has some relevance. So number one, Delgado threw Miller under a bus earlier, and I think a lot of people would say rightfully so. I think there are no good guys in this story, with a great exception of Jason Miller's wife, who's an American hero for forgiving him, I guess, and her choice and whatever she wanted to do, everybody would understand. And then welcoming the young child into the family, it's unbelievably gracious and magnanimous of her. But now let's talk about the bad guys. So people didn't know about the affair. All of a sudden there's leaks about how Delgado and Miller were at a strip club in Vegas before the last presidential debate. Hence the reference to the Vegas love child. Delgado says it was conceived somewhere else. Who cares? Okay, no one cares where it was conceived. But they obviously had an affair. That's the relevant part here. And Delgado starts leaking about the affair back then. So Jason Miller wants to be White House communications advisor, and Delgado starts saying he should resign immediately. People are like, whoa, why is a Trump surrogate saying that this Trump top aide, and he was a communications lead for the campaign, should resign? And then he does resign. So now, so they obviously had an affair. He's married, party of family values. They got 81% of the evangelical vote. So evangelicals just admit it, you love tawdry sex, you love illicit affairs, you love divorces, you love all the things that are not in the Bible, because Trump got divorced twice, has been married three times, cheated on all of his wives. Almost all of his advisors are now, Miller apparently in this affair, Delgado in the affair, story in the National Enquirer probably planted by Trump that Manafort had an affair. Affair, affair, affair. Evangelicals just confess you never cared about sex outside of marriage. You never cared about it. All you cared about was your politics for other reasons. It was always a political prop for you, and I think that's the core of this story. So now, finally, so Delgado says that stuff. Miller gets fired, basically, and steps away from the Trump administration. I don't know why Delgado thinks she's on such a moral high ground.
Right, can I comment on that quickly?
Yeah.
Look, I know that, let's say two people are engaged in an extramarital affair with one individual being married, the other not being married. I know that, you know, the blame is placed on the person who is married, they shouldn't be cheating on their significant other. However, her qualifier of, they were separated, and you're part of this conservative movement where you go around judging the lives of other individuals, and then you're saying, no, no, what I did was okay. I mean, he was legally married, but they were separated and we dated for 2 months. No, no, he's married. He's married. Okay? So that qualifier doesn't justify your actions. And by the way, look, this is for people who don't go around judging the lives of other people. Like, we're humans, and I get it. And so if this didn't involve family values conservatives, I wouldn't be as harsh. But like, her qualifier just really grates on my nerves, because it's not, no, that's not good enough. That doesn't make you the good guy. Now, I hear you. I mean, it was super shady of him to cut communication with you after you told him that you got pregnant. But also, while you continue on with this public ridiculous behavior, you gotta keep in mind, you have a son now. right? You've brought a child into this world, and now, you know, this crap is going to live on the internet for the rest of humanity, and that kid's going to read it one day. Like, just stop.
And Jason Miller is his dad. Okay, look, I got screw Jason Miller, and he's done everything wrong, and I can't stand him anyway, and so I'm not defending him even 1%.
Right.
But I'm also, but I'll be even harsher than you on AJ Delgado. Mm-hmm. So, hey, family values person going on TV talking about family values and how Trump is great. Wait. Why are you the victim because you both had consensual sex outside of marriage? Wait a minute. Forget that he's married. I thought you weren't supposed to have any sex outside of marriage. Were you married to him? But AJ, you weren't married to him, were you? So you're telling everybody else, hey, get married. Don't do sex outside of marriage. Okay, all you evangelicals, go vote for us because we're the moral people. You go have sex with him apparently over and over and over again while he's married. Then you play the victim like, oh my God, I was misled. I thought that I was just having a technical affair with him, but not one that, you know, mattered at all. Mm-hmm. I thought I was just having sex outside of marriage, which I tell everybody else not to do. And now color me offended that it turns out that this serial liar who I know lies for the Trump campaign professionally also lied to me.
And by the way, Jason Miller was a huge supporter of Ted Cruz. In fact, he had tweeted about how sleazy Donald Trump is, how terrible he is, especially after Trump attacked Ted Cruz's wife. And then when Ted Cruz's chances of getting nominated by the Republican Party basically faded, and Trump asked him to come work with him, he's like, yeah, sure, of course I'll do it. He started deleting his tweets. Anyway, just shady, sleazy behavior on all sides. And what I would hope is that they would at least keep their kids in mind, including Miller's two daughters, right? Delgado, just stop, okay? You have a son now. There are two little girls that have to deal with this stuff in the future. It's just sick, and they need to stop.
And finally, look, I don't care about anybody's personal lives. They want to have extramarital sex. I'm in favor. I don't care. It's not my business. I don't think he should have cheated on his wife, but it's, again, not my business, okay? But these are the guys who claim it is our business. So the next time you see a Republican or a conservative or evangelical or whoever it might be moralizing to you and telling you what you should and shouldn't do in your life,
in your bedroom,
whether it's sex outside of marriage, whether it's taking away contraception, whether it's what you do with your body, or whether it's a lifestyle they don't agree with. How dare you have gay sex? You should only kind of have the kind of adulterous sex we have that is just as against the Bible as anything else. Keep AJ Delgado and Jason Miller in mind, and their trips to Vegas strip clubs and their affair in mind the next time you hear some conservative moralizing to you, because they don't mean a word of it. And behind the scenes, they're doing that and way worse. All right, now when we come back, we've got a lot more for you guys, including Eric Bolling and how he's striking back and on the sexual harassment charges against him. And Jeffrey Lord of CNN has been fired. We'll tell you why, and we'll tell you whether it should have happened, and maybe some surprising opinions there as well. We'll be right back.